speaker in this morning is Kenji Fukaya, Kyoto University. He will talk about counting open Riemann service with Lagrangian boundary condition and perturbative chance and gauge theory.
So thank you very much. And I also want to thank organizers for inviting me to this nice, to give an opportunity to talk in this conference. So what I am, I want to talk is something like this. So let me consider Calabi-Yau 3-4, or maybe it is just a symplectic six-dimensional, real six-dimensional manifold with vanishing plus chamfers. And we consider Lagrangian submanifold, and maybe you can say it's a special Lagrangian submanifold. But it's not so much necessary. We only need that Lagrangian submanifold whose Maslow index is zero. And this condition is automatic in the case of a special Lagrangian submanifold. And we consider this Riemann surface with boundary. So this is just a closed Riemann surface with genus G, and you remove M disks. So you get this Riemann surface with M boundary component. So it's of genus G. Let me write it sigma GM. And we let beta be a homotopy class of a map from this Riemann surface with boundary to ML. This means that this boundary component goes to your Lagrangian submanifold. So this is the setting. And something I want to study is this number. And there is a parenthesis. It means that this number is not exactly the one I will use, but I want to define this number later more precisely. But this is, in principle, a number of a holomorphic map from your Riemann surface with boundary to this M and L of homotopy class beta. And so we take some complex structure on your Riemann surface, and we require that this phi to be holomorphic. And this complex structure of Riemann surface may vary. And it is well known that this moduli space is zero dimensional in the sense of virtual dimensions. So in a sense, we can count it. And what we want to define, what we want to study is this generating functions. So we have a two parameter. H and Q, and H is we count the genus, and Q we count for energy. So we take this is the end, right? We take this number, and then we multiply H to the power 2G plus M minus 1. This is, I think, the first batch number of your Riemann surface, right? And this Q to the power beta wedge omega. So this is a formal power series, and let me call it Sotsui Gromov-Witt invariant. And this Sotsui is in Japanese for relatives. But the relative Gromov-Witt might be used for other, in other occasions. So I want to use Sotsui. And this S might be, so S is S Gromov-Witt. So, relative. And if you are Chinese, maybe you can see what this means. Okay, so now yeah, I think this is what I'm supposed to draw. So now there is some property you expect for this generating functions. It's the following. So we consider this invariant S, Z, W, H, and Q. There are two limits. One limit is when H goes to zero. So the H goes to zero means that you consider the case when G is zero and M is one. So this is just a usual disk. So you reduce the thing to the counting of the disks. And in this case, this one is, we turn out to be phi of B. And phi is, I will define it later, but this is something called a superpotential. And B is a critical point, so this means that DC, DB at B is zero. I'll explain later what is the superpotentials and what this means. But so this invariant somehow are supposed to become this critical value of superpotentials when it restricts to this to the case of disks. And there are other limit. This is a limit when you put Q is zero. So Q is zero means that we consider beta is a trivial homotopy class. Trivial homotopy class means that everything goes to your Lagrangian submanifold. So you count only a point. And what we expect is that this will turn out to be a perturbative Chern-Simon invariant. Chern-Simon's gauge theory invariant. And this was made rigorous in mathematical sense by Axelrod and Zinger. Axelrod and Zinger defined some perturbative chance in some invariant for three manifold. Maybe I think I need to assume that H1 of L is zero. And this is a perturbative invariant for trivial connections. Maybe you can include flat connections on L and you can do the same story, but maybe for simplicity, I restrict to this case. So now this is something I want to do. And maybe the theorem is for things. There is such a, if you assume that L is a homology space and assume L is oriented, then we can cook up this kind of invariant, SDWH2, which has this asymptotic property. When you H goes to zero, it gets superpotentials, and when critical value of superpotentials, when Q is zero, it gets a perturbative Chern-Simon invariant. But actually, I put parentheses in the theorems, and there's only one point I didn't clarify yet. It is something about the sign, orientations, in the case when the genus is not zero, or M is larger than one. And in the case of this G zero, M is one, orientation is okay, but in higher genus, maybe I need something more. But we can settle it, but I didn't do it yet, so I put in the parentheses. So now, I want to make two remarks about this thing. So this one is, I say it's invariant, but it's a bit delicate point. So there's a remark. So first of all, if you consider this one, QH, this depends on almost complex structure. Or maybe a complex structure on your manifold M. So this is not an invariant. So, I mean, of course, one of the important property of usual Gromov-Hick invariant, counting a map from closed Riemann surface, is that it depends only on simplex structure and independent of almost complex structure. But that is not the case for this sorts of invariant. And there's another thing. And also it is not invariant of Hamiltonian perturbations. Of L. This means that if you have a PT, it is a family of Hamiltonian diffeomorphism, or exact simple diffeomorphism. Then if you take LT is equal to PT of L, then there is some formulas which I draw here. You consider of this invariant for L1, and if you consider another invariant of L0, then this difference you can calculate in the following way. This is a sum over all phi from Riemann surface to M, holomorphic and non-constant. And we count the intersection number of image of phi sigma z and k, maybe I need to define k. Let me do this soon. Q, omega, wedge, phi star, sigma, and h to z. And k is a union of pt, not sigma. Sigma, yeah, sigma. No, L, I'm sorry, L. So this is the formulas. And this is a Riemann surface without boundary. So this one is a Riemann surface without boundary. So let me see that this is this K, so this L is three manifold, so you take unions, you have a four manifold. with boundary at 0 and L1. And this is a Riemann surface, so you can calculate its intersection number in 6 manifolds. Then you have this, then this is some kind of, then there is ambiguity of this Gromov-Witten, Sawtzy Gromov-Witten invariant, which is some kind, this is some kind of a usual Gromov-Witten invariant. So there is some ambiguity, but I'll accept this and we got this invariant. And also, there is a similar formula for when you change the almost complex structures. So, but in that sense, this is not very refined, but there is something delicate. So I want to explain this story a bit more. So let me start. What is this superpotential? So I want to explain this notion of superpotentials. Then it is something related to this infinity algebra, which we are studying with Otto and Ono. And in a book, which we are now almost complete and not yet complete, but in a book, it is we use some kind of similar homology theory to define infinity structure, which came from Fourier theory. But since I want to somehow relate it to this perturbative Chern-Simon invariant, and this perturbative Chern-Simon invariant is somehow related to this Drum theory, you know about it. It's a Drum theory and it's a differential form. So I want to define this infinity structure using Drum theory. It's a small modification, it's almost equivalent things, but I want to use Drum theory to define this infinity algebra. So I want to record it. So there are some definitions I need. So let me consider omega of L is a manifold, it is just a manifold. And we consider omega of L, it's a set of all maps from S1 to L, so it is a free loop space. And there is an obvious S1 notion, you can reparameterize the domains of the map. Then I want to define some notions, like a, what I want to call approximate Drum chain. It is the following things. So you have a P, P is a manifold, and omega is some differential form on P, and F is a smooth map from P to the loop space. Then the condition is that your omega, which is the differential form on your manifold, is of compact support. So compact support differential form on your manifold, P. P may not be compact, it may be non-compact. And the second, that if you take these compositions, so you have a P and you take a F, F is a map here, and you evaluate it at this, at the marked point, then you get a map from P to L, and I assume that it is, submargin. So let me draw it here. You have a map P, the evaluation map from loop space to L is just, you have L here, then you can just take it to one. One is a loop space. Then if you compose this, I assume it's a submargin. And I need some more trivial definitions. And I say that this one is a cycle, an approximate Drum cycle, if P has no boundary and omega is closed form. And its dimension or degree is just the dimension of P minus degree of your form. And this is somehow a natural way to realize some homology class of a loop space. Namely, if this is a cycle, then I take a Poincaré dual of omega and I push it by F. And this is an element of the homology of the loop space. Here, this Poincaré duality goes from Drum cohomology of compact support, K of the of P, to the homology of dimension P minus K of P. So P is a manifold, as I said. So you can just take this Poincaré dual and you push it F, so you get a homology class. And it is somehow quite an easy exercise that any homology class of your loop space can be realized by this approximate Drum chain. You can increase the dimension of this P arbitrarily by somehow artificially putting extra dimensions. And there is an S1 equivalent version, so I mean S1 equivalent one. epsilon equivariant approximates drum cycle is a when this S1 acts on P and F is a S1 equivariant map and omega is S1 invariant. Then in this case, what you get is this fundamental class. This class, P, F, omega, is an element of S1 equivariant homology of your loop space. And again, any element of this equivariant loop space you get from this. And the reason I introduce here is that this this notion of approximate drum chain is somehow natural one you can use to realize a virtual fundamental class. So this is why I introduced here. So let me consider this moduli space. So we consider beta. It is a homotopy class of the maps of from Riemann surface with boundary to this pair M of L. Then, as I said, that I want to consider this moduli space M, G M beta. So it is a set of all pair of phi and J of sigma. Here, phi is a holomorphic map from this Riemann surface with boundary to the symplectic manifold and the boundary condition light on L. And J of J, small j sigma, is a complex structure of Riemann surface. And the phi is assumed to be a holomorphic with respect to this complex structure of Riemann surface and complex structure of, almost complex structure of the target, M. And I want to define some automorphism, which is in principle a diffeomorphism group of Riemann surface. Then you have an evaluation map from this guy to this M's product of a loop space. It is just you restrict your phi to the boundary. There is some small things we need to do about the parameterization of the boundary, but I skip it. And what's nice of this approximate drum chain is the following things. We consider this, and usually this kind of moduli space, you need somehow, you need to make it transversal, and you need some technical things. But in this case, we can realize the virtual fundamental chain of this moduli space as a S1 to the power M equivariant approximate drum chain of the product group space. So you want to include this approximate drum chains, then everything you can do for this. So now this is a, so I don't want to talk so much about this kind of transversality issue. So, but I can just say that this virtual fundamental chain you need is realized as this approximate drum chain I introduced, equivariant. So now, to define the superpotentials, I want to go to the case when G is zero and M is one. M is one, only one boundary, then G is zero. And I want to take lambda L, it is a drum complex of your Lagrangian submanifold L, and MK is an operation which comes from K's tensor product of the drum complex to the drum complex. And so now let me define it. So first of all, as I said, that this partial fundamental chain of your moduli space is realized as the approximate drum chain, so it's the pair P and omega. P is a manifold, which is somehow huge dimensions, and omega is a differential form on it. And then I want to take U1 to UK, it is a differential form of your Lagrangian submanifold, and this differential form I want to define MK beta, U1 to the UK is something like a variation zero, an integration along the fibers, and the integral is like this. So let me explain this notations. It's a bit complicated notation, so maybe it's better to explain it. There are several things appear in this formulas. So C of K is a simple thing. It is a set of all K points on S1. It's a boundary of this. Which is different, distinct, and the respect cyclic order. So it is something like this, et cetera. And then there is a, so let me recall that this is, there is a map F beta from this virtual fundamental chain. It is 0, 1, right? Yeah, to beta, to the loop space of L. So this is the part of the data of this approximate drum change. And then there is a map, a variation map, which goes to this P 0, 1 beta product S1 CK to the, CK plus 1, CK plus 1 to L to the power K. And this is simple. So let me write this. X goes to F beta of X, and F beta of X is a loop, right? This is a loop. Then you have a X and S0, SK. Then I just take this F beta of X and evaluate at S1 and SK. And evaluation zero, it's a similar thing, have the same price to L is just X to F beta X at S zero. So now I explained this notation here. This is S1 equivariant. So this is S1 action, you have a fiber product. S1 product and divided by S1 action. So you have this guy. So you have a form here, U1 to UK, and then you pull back by this separation map. And you have a differential form omega on this virtual this is one. On this P, so you take a wedge. Then finally, you take this integration along fibers of this evaluation map F0. And what you get is a smooth form. The reason, so what you get is a smooth form. I mean, this MK beta U1 to UK is a smooth form. And so this is because that this evaluation zero is a submargin. So you can stay in a smooth drum form. This is because that you consider P, then you consider omega L to L, and this is this is a submargin. This is a part of the assumption of this approximate drum change. So in the case of the submargin, the integration along fibers makes sense. So you have a pullback. Pullback is a smooth form on this fiber product, and your evaluation is a submargin, so you have a smooth form. And everything, your omega is compact support, so you have a well-defined smooth forms. And then we define MK to be the sum of this MK beta, and with this Q to the power beta cap W. So this is the usual definition of this fire boundary operator, of this operation, the Fourier theory, and I need MK bar. And MK bar is zero when K is not one or two, and when K is one, it is just a drum differential up to sign, and when K is two, it is a wedge product. So you have so this MK bar defines the usual differential gradient algebra structure than drum on your drum complex, and you deform it using this MK beta, and you get this MK. And what we can prove is that this MK is NPT algebra. And then it is just some extra symmetry, which is called a cyclic symmetry. This means that you take MK, U1 to UK, and you take this wedge UK plus 1 and integrate along L. Then this operation is cyclically symmetric up to sign. So if you just cyclically change this U1 to UK plus 1, you get the same thing, except sign. So this is the definition of a cyclic NPT algebra, which we need to define superpotentials. So the superpotential is defined the following way. We take this one form on L, so this B is a one form on your Lagrangian sum manifold, and the superpotential C of B is just a sum of a beta of and this second term is the main part. It is just MK BBB to B and K plus 1. And you have some first term, which is actually P01 beta omega 001 P. This is just some kind of a number of the holomorphic disk of, this is in principle a number of holomorphic disk of homology class beta. Because this is somehow, this pair is some kind of a virtual fundamental chain, so you can just integrate this form on P, you get this number. And actually, the idea is to put this first term to get a nice superpotential due to Joyce. according to Paul Zeidel. He told me so, and so I think this is due to Joyce. So you get this functions, and the functions which we draw is some kind of a usual definition of superpotentials. So this is a function on a one form of L, and it takes value on Novikov ring. It is a formal power series ring, AI, Q to the power lambda I, and AI is a real number, and lambda I is non-negative, and lambda I goes to plus infinity. So this is the definition of superpotentials. And something we can prove is the following thing. If you assume the first homology of the Lagrangian sum manifold is trivial, then this superpotential has a critical point. And so this is a function on the one form, and this is a critical point if this if H1 is zero. So as I said, that this, there it is, yeah. The stories I want to cook up is the following things, right? You have this invariant, and when this when H is zero, this means that you restrict the case genus is zero and the boundary component is one. What you get should be a critical value of the superpotential. So this we define. So I define superpotential like this, and the invariant I want to explain is somehow related to this superpotential in this way. So something I want to explain is this side, Potapotin Chan Simons, and I want to join this story to get this one. So let me review something about Potapotin Chan Simons invariant. And this is some kind of old story, it takes already 10 years, but maybe I want to explain quite a bit about it. So for Potapotin Chan Simons, we consider the following things. So let me take L is a three manifold, any oriented three manifold, and we fix the Riemannian metric. And then we can define PT. This is a two form on a product of L and L, which has the following property. If you integrate over L on M of this PT XY, wedge U of Y, so U is any form on L. Then if you integrate over Y, then this is supposed to be e to the power minus Laplacian of U at X. So this is called a propagator. This is a propagator, which appears in Chan-Simons theory. Pardon? Yeah? Yes, it's deep in the case H1 is zero. Up to gauge transform. So, the value is well defined. And in the case when H1 is non-zero, even if it exists, it may not be unique. And the main property of this propagator is the following. If you integrate from zero to infinity of dt of this y of L, of D of PT, so this is a ground differential on L cross L, and you take XY and wedge U of Y, and then this is supposed to be a identity minus HU of X, and H is a harmonic projection. H in the ground of L, this is a harmonic projection. So this is a quite well-known property of this propagator. So let me start with this propagator. And then I want to review what is a perturbative Chan-Simon invariant. Here, U of X minus HU of X. And H is a harmonic projection of the differential form. So it is like this. So I want to define perturbative Chan-Simon invariant of your three manifold. You don't need anything about the simple topology here. But it is the sum over gamma of some invariant, PCS gamma L, and H to the first batch number of gamma. And here, gamma is a graph, some kind of a graph. And I don't want to define it in complete generality because it is a well-known thing. I mean, it is old things established by many 10 years ago. But in the case when gamma is this particular graph, which is called a theta graph, then this term is the following. You have this integration from zero to infinity of T1, T2, T3, and you integrate over X, L cross L, and you take PT1 XY, wedge PT2 XY, P, PT3 XY. So this is a, so PT is a two form, so this is a six form. So on L cross L, you have a well-defined differentials and you integrate over T1, T2, T3. So heuristically, you see something like this. So this guy is assigned to X on your manifold L, and this other point is assigned to Y, and you put T1, T2, T3 on each edge and you integrate. And this is a perturbative transform invariant, and you take all the graphs and you take sum like this and you get some invariant. That I think is a story by Axel and Zinger. And what I want to do is somehow to put some effect. So this is some kind of a, this should correspond to the part when there's no holomorphic disk or no holomorphic curve with boundaries. So in the case when you are in the cotangent bundles and when you are Lagrangian sum manifold with zero sections, this is actually the invariant we study. But in the case when you are compact symplectic manifold and you have a Lagrangian sum manifold, then you need some more effects. So something I wanted to include, so something I wanted to define about the following things, right? Maybe I think it's better to put it here. So now, I want to define this number, m beta n beta z of m. That's the number of holomorphic, that is somehow, this is, you need parentheses here. That is the number of holomorphic maps from Riemann surface with genus z of m boundary components to the pair m of L and of homotopy class beta. And so I wanted to use this number, but as I said that if you just naively use this number, then the story does not work so easily, so simply. So I want to somehow modify this definitions appropriately so that we get correct ones. So then once we define these numbers, then we find what we want to finally get is this SGWL is generating functions using this number, right? So now I want to, so what I want to do is to make this one more precise. So this one is not correct definitions. So what I want to do is to make a correct definitions of this. That's the following. So let me consider the case when G is zero and M is one. And the general case is similar. So I want to consider this G is zero and M is one. And it is a sum over, again, over some graph. And so we have some, for each graph, you get this n gamma of beta, and you take sum, and you get this number. And this gamma, this graph gamma, is a tree, because this is genus zero, this is a tree, plus you assign each relative pi two, element of relative pi two for each vertex. So what you get is something like this. So you have a tree, and for each vertex, you put some element beta, which depends on the vertex. And you need some conditions. The condition is the following. You sum up all this beta, which you assign to the vertex, and the sum is this beta you start with. So you have the sum of the all beta p is beta. And somehow this beta p should be non-negative energy. And also, if this energy is zero, you assume that this beta p is trivial. And the other thing is that if this is the vertex of edge two, no, I think edge, not two, yeah, I think, yeah, I need to correct it. If the vertex of edge is not three, then beta p is non-zero. So, I mean, this means that for the class of beta p is zero, you only need a trivalent vertex. Only trivalent vertex can have a trivial beta. I think in the case of perturbative transformations, all vertex are supposed to be trivalent. So it's the generalization of that fact. So now I want to explain this definition of this n gamma of beta. So this graph I draw there is a bit too much complicated to explain that case. So I want to explain a bit simpler case. So I want to consider. Oh yeah, I think I cannot read this too. So the case I use is the following gamma. This one is a bit simpler, right? So this is a beta one, and this is a beta two, and this is a beta is zero. So it's a trivalent, the beta is zero, beta three, and beta four. So I want to explain the definition in this particular case. And so now n gamma of beta, for this particular gamma, is something very much complicated, but it is somehow 0 to infinity dt1, dt2, dt3, dt4, and here another integrand is m of beta 1 cross m of beta 2 cross m of beta 3 cross m of beta 4. Cross L, and it's S1 equivalent product of C2. Yeah, this is, I'm sorry, this is complicated. And this part I will write later. So let me remind you that what was here. In this case, C2 is just S1 cross S1 because of minus diagonal. Because it automatically respects the cyclic order. And m beta, omega beta, is a virtual fundamental chain of the moduli space, of moduli space m beta. That is a map phi from disk with boundary to ML, holomorphic, it's homology class beta. So this appears here, and I need to explain what we integrate. So now I need another transparency. So this is a bit complicated things, but the principle is very easy. So now what it is? Yeah. So we are taking this product m beta 1, m beta 2, m beta 3, m beta 4. And it is somehow the map, right? It is something like a map from disk to the M. So let me take this element phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, phi 4. It is an element here. And then P is a L. So I draw phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, phi 4 here, because it is somehow belonging to this homotopy class. Oh, what's happened? Oh, yeah. Where I'm not supposed to do this. This is the phi 1. P2, yeah, P3, P4 here, right? And the T1, so the T1, T2, T3, T4 is a number between 0 and infinity. And I put these numbers on each edges. And then P is a point of L, and this P is related to this vertex. I remind you that this is a vertex where your homology class is trivial. So you have several vertex like that, you have a P on each point. And you have S1, S2, which is the element of C2, which is S1 cross S1. And then here I draw Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, Q5. And those points is somehow related to the, related to here. So Q1 is a value of phi 1 at 1 at a base point. And Q2 is a value of phi 2 at S1, the first marked point of the C2. And Q3 is a phi 2, S2. And Q4 is a phi 3, phi 1, Q5 is P41. So I explained this picture, and then the formula coming here is omega beta 1 P1, which omega beta 2 P2, which omega beta 3 P3, which omega beta 4 P4, which P T1 Q1 Q2 which P T2 Q3 P which P T3 P Q4 which P T4 P Q5. This formula looks very complicated, but it's not. It's the principle how to draw it. It's very easy. For each somehow phi1 phi I, you take this omega. And remind you that omega is this part of the virtual fundamental class. So you have this pair of the homology of the manifold and the form. So I put omega on each of this here. And then for each vertex you put omega. And for each edges you put this propagator. And as I draw this Q1, Q2 like this, so you have a propagator PT1, Q1, Q2, etc. So this is the way to define this differential forms. And then you integrate this differential form on this configuration space, and You can see easily that this is the correct dimensions, you get the number. So I think once we explain this case, maybe you can guess the general case in a quite natural way. So now, then this invariant is just a sum up of all this, over all this kind of diagrams. So this is the case of this, the genus is zero, and M is one. But once we do this, then the general case seems very much similar, so I just draw the pictures and I don't want to explain it quite detail. But so in the case, then you have a non-zero genus or several boundary components, then what we consider is N gamma SM beta. Then in this case, gamma is a bit more complicated. So gamma is again a kind of graph with edges, and each vertex you assign some kind of a Riemann surface with boundaries. But then you draw this something like this. So this is some kind of edges. And each vertex corresponds to this kind of Riemann surface. So you fix some combinatorial fixtures. And actually, you need to fix some ribbon structure of each strip. Something like this. It's a ribbon structure. So this is our fat graph. So if you just look at this, then you see that this is a Riemann surface, right? If you just remove this point, you have a Riemann surface with boundaries. So you can say about the genus and the number of boundary components of this Riemann surface. And I assume it is G and M. So now for each of these kind of vertex, you can assign a similar way of the moduli space, the form behind the form omega, and the moduli space. And for each of these edges, you assign this propagator in the same way. So you write down this kind of integration in exactly the same way. Then you get integrals. So you sum up, you get the same one. So this is a definition. It's complicated, but it's the principle is rather obvious. So now I can define this SGWL in this way. So now there are two things I claim. One is the following thing. If you consider this SGWL of Q of H, and I put Q is zero, then this is actually a perturbative transform invariant. And if you think about this definition quite a while, and this is trivial. Because in this case, you have you don't have any, in the case when this beta is zero, so this means that the beta omega is zero, this means that beta is zero. So in the case when this homology class is trivial, you don't, in each of the vertex, you don't have any Riemann surface, you just have just usual dot. Then the definition is exactly coincides with the definition of perturbative transform invariant. So this is a trivial statement. You don't need anything to do. So this is the first thing. And then the second thing is that this is independent on the Riemann metric. So I remember that we use this propagator to define this perturbative, to define this invariant. And this, to define this propagator, you use the Laplace operator, so you use the Riemannian metrics. So you need to show that this is independent on the choice of Riemannian metric. But actually, the proof that this is independent of the Riemannian metric is the same, basically the same as the proof that the perturbative transform invariant is well defined. So you change this propagators and you get the same results. So I don't want to explain this fine point so much. But actually, it depends on the large J, but I don't want to explain that part so much. So now this is the definition. So I want to explain a bit more. So now the other statement, so where it is. Yeah, so this is the definition of this. So at the beginning, I say like this, right? So this one I explained, and when Q is zero, this goes to perturbative transform invariant. But so now I want to explain this part of the story. So you start from this perturbative transform invariant, and if I want to consider H is zero, this means that I restrict it to the case of disks, I mean genus zero, Riemann surface with boundary, with one boundary, it goes to superpotentials. So I want to explain this part. So the theorem is like this, right? If you consider this SGW, L, Q, and I want to put H is zero, then it is a function of, it is a formal power series of Q, and it coincides with the critical value of superpotentials. So this is the theorem I want to explain here. That says that this it is better to put it plus minus here, and the sign for the higher genus case is more complicated, and I don't know how to do it yet. So higher genus case sign should be fixed, but genus zero case, it is easier, so I know how to do it. So this is no parenthesis here, it's a theorem. So now let me explain how to prove this kind of things. Then the first thing I want to mention the following things. So let me remind you what was the superpotentials. So this superpotential has some constant term plus summation over k plus over 1 over k plus 1 of mk b to the power k b. So this was the definition of the superpotential. So now I want to study the critical value of these superpotentials. So I want to take differentials of these superpotentials. So let me take this phi b plus epsilon x and dd epsilon. Then I use a so-called cyclic symmetry. So the main thing I need to prove here is the cyclic symmetry. No, not here. Yeah, it's here. So I use the cyclic symmetry of this operation to show that this one is equal to summation over mk b to the power k comma x. So this is a so this you can show using by elementary things. But cyclic symmetry is essential to prove this. Then this implies that if B is a critical point of the superpotentials, then the sum over K is 0 to infinity of maybe K b to the power K is 0. And this is a famous equation, which is called the Mora-Carlton, some generalization of the Mora-Carlton equation. So this is a critical value, critical point of this superpotential is solution of Mora-Carlton equation, which in our book with Ohota Ono, we call it a bounded chain. So this is the first thing we need to remark. So now I want to mention the second thing. It's the following things. So let me recall that you have a Brown complex, and we define infinity structures on Brown complex. And then we consider Brown cohomology of L with the coefficient in Novikov ring. So it is, of course, by definition, the kernel of M1 bar divided by image of M1 bar. Here, M1 bar is just the Brown differentials. And I remind you that this M1, which is a first operator of this infinity structure, is M1 bar plus something which is divisible by Q, positive lambda. I'm sorry, Q, positive lambda. So this means that if you Q, which is very difficult to read, Q of lambda, and lambda is positive. This means that when in a limit, when Q is zero, your M1 bar is just a Brown differentials. And there are some general theorems which says that this is something which we call filtered infinite algebra. For filtered infinite algebra, if we consider it a classical cohomology, then there is an infinite structure on a classical cohomology which is homotopy equivalent to the usual, to the original infinite algebra. And this we write in our book, but this is some kind of filtered versions of the theorem, which is due to Kadeh Shibeli and several other people, and probably the version the proof I need in this story is due to Konsevich and Sauerbrunn in the paper about Tomorrow-Shamina symmetry on toline. So this is the theorem, and in our case it's a bit different because usually there are similar theorems, but which is somehow. There is an infinite structure on the cohomology, so M1 cohomology of the thing. But what we take is not M1 cohomology, but M1 bar cohomology. And this we need for filtered versions. But anyway, we have these theorems. So now there is another theorem, which we proved in our book, which is the following things. So you have two infinite algebras, and suppose you have a homotopy equivalence. I'm sorry, I don't define homotopy equivalence here, but you can guess. There are notions of homotopy equivalence between infinity algebras. And here, homotopy equivalence between infinity algebras, then if you consider this set of the Mora-Carlton equations, and there is some notion called a gauge equivalence, then a gauge equivalence class of solution of Mora-Carlton equation is independent of homotopy equivalence. So you have two infinity algebras which are homotopy equivalent, then the solution of this Mora-Carlton is somehow bijective. You have a natural isomorphism. So these two theorems I need, and I just want to review these theorems. So this means that somehow, this means the following things. So now let me go back to our situations we are studying. So now, in our case, We assume that you have a three manifold L, and we assume that it is a rational homogeneous sphere. So this means that it is R if star is 0 or 3 and 0 otherwise. So now I just want to consider this NPD structure which I claim to exist. Then this is actually trivial. Is equal to cohomology rings. Because since this is trivial, there is no room to you deform this ring. So though at the beginning you have some NPT algebras, but after you reduce everything to the homology, then this is actually no quantum effect. So this is just the usual homology group. This is because that we assume it is a rational homogeneous sphere. Of course, if it's a H1 and H2, then this can be non-trivial and it's interesting. But in a particular case, this is trivial. So what it means, so this means the following things. But still, you know, so since though this is trivial, still this means something to this super potentials. So what this means? So you have this trivial things. And this is just a usual Durham complex. And then as I say that this is a homotopy equivalent. So this is a homotopy equivalent to this Durham complex. Sorry, this lambda is for differential form and this is for Novikov rings. It's confusing, but. So there's homotopy equivalence. So now what I wanted to say the following thing. So I wanted to consider this solution of this Mora-Cartan equations. And since this guy is rather trivial thing, there is a trivial solution. So zero is a solution of Mora-Cartan equations. In particular, what is important in particular is M0 is trivial. M0 is zero for this case. So you have this zero is the solution. Let me remind you that this starts from M0 1 plus M1b plus M2b square, blah, blah, blah. So what we need to be careful is that when this M0 1 is non-zero, zero is not a solution of the Mora-Cartan equation. So that's the point we are studying about this obstruction theory, which we are studying with Oota and Ono. But for this, you reduce it to homology group, of course, M0 is trivial. M1 is zero again, M2 is just cup product. So this is almost a trivial structure. Then zero is a solution. So this means that if you start from zero, you get some B. This is the solution of this equation. And actually this B may not be trivial. So this, so after reducing everything to the homology, you get zero as a solution of Mora-Cartan. But on the original Durham complex, and the original this NPD structure, you get some non-trivial B. That is the critical point of the superpotentials. So this is one thing. So let me write this homotopy equivalence C. So now we got this B. So this B is something which I need to call C star zero. Then the statement I mentioned before, it should be the following things, right? So yeah. So I need to calculate this superpotential at C star zero. And what I want to prove is that this one is equal to this SDW L of Q and H is zero. So this is a statement we need to prove. Then I want to show you quite a few words how to prove these kind of things. Yeah. So I want to show you how to prove this, and then I need to recall What is the proof of these two results? I mean, especially the second result. Maybe both results. So I need to know that this, to show that this, I need to write down this persistor as explicitly. So persistor somehow transforms Mora-Cartan's solution of Mora-Cartan equation here to the solution of Mora-Cartan equation. So this is cooked up by some homotopy equivalence between NVT algebras. And this C is C is an NVT homomorphism. So let me draw P C is an NVT homomorphism from C1 to C2. Then this is something like a C is a C0, C1, C2, blah, 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 and CK. So this is a bit complicated. So if you explain more and more, it gets more complicated. But so the CK is a map from C1 to the tensor K to C2. And then C star of B0 is the summation over K of CK of the B to the power K. Okay, this is the definition of this C star. And what we can prove is that this C is an infinity homomorphism, then the solution of Mora-Cartan equation here will become a solution of Mora-Cartan equation here. That's some kind of a standard fact on this infinity algebra. So I want to define, I want to study this, but so I want to define, see what this is. But then, of course, Psi star of zero is just the only leading term, so Psi zero of one, right? Only the leading term. So I want to see what is the Psi star. So this is the Psi star. So now to see what is the Psi star zero, I need to. So this is about this second theorem. But then to see Psi star, I need to remind you what is homotopy equivalence. So I just wrote down there is homotopy equivalence. But this homotopy equivalence we can construct explicitly, and then I need to show what is the homotopy equivalence. And to define this homotopy equivalence, you can find this homotopy equivalence in a book, but this homotopy equivalence is cooked up in the following way. And this construction is very much similar to what Concevich and Soiberman did in their book paper. So, let me draw, yeah. So Psi star, Psi k is some, again, this summation over graphs. And here, the graph is something like this, so I must load down very special case because the general case is a bit complicated, so I want to type in special case. Something like this. And then this is, I think, K is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Have a beta. And you have a U1, U2, U3, U4, U5. So this is a gamma. Then the phi 5 gamma, U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, it's by definition, equal to Z of M beta 2, 3, G, M, beta 1, 3, U1, U2, U3, M, 0, beta 4, 0 of 1. It corresponds to this arrow. Oh, yeah, you need G here also. Yeah, I think I should soon finish. So G of M 2 beta 5 U 4 U 5. So this is actually a definition of C. And this G is something like 0 to infinity of PT. So you have this is a green kernel. So if you integrate propagator, you get a green kernel. So this means that if you have a U1, U2, U3, you get this, join them, and you take M3 beta 1, and you get G here, and you get composed in a way that this tree goes, and you get this element. So now, once we see these definitions, so what this corresponds to phi k k, so isometric field zero beta, right? We have this only zero. So this means that you have only, so this means that there is no edges like this. So you have something only like this. Right? So this is somehow sum like this. Then, so this is the end. So I want to start from mk of this phi beta 0, 1 was the same thing. So we have this another circles, and you have similar pictures. So as you see that, as you recall what we defined about this invariant when the case of genus is zero, this is exactly what we defined before. And there is some little combinatorics we need to complete that this equality, that this critical value of super potential is equal to this of this SGW when H is zero, but I omit it. So this is basically how we prove this statement. So I stop here. Thank you very much.
Amen.
Could you explain how your definition of the virtual fundamental class kind of relates to this very stacky, complicated algebraic geometric definition?
Oh, I see. You know, usually this virtual fundamental cycle is some kind of a, you have finite dimensional reductions of the modular problems. You have some finite dimensional things, you have abstraction bundles. Then you consider some kind of a family of sections, so that in a full family, this family of section is some kind of transversalities. And the family of section is parameterized by some parameter spaces. And if you consider this, the total of this, you have a finite dimensional manifold. That's our P.